you know what I'm worried about, though, is, like, forgetting, like, friends, like, spouses and kids and, like, dogs' names.
Hello and welcome to this debate recap episode of the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk, and we are coming to you from the spin room of the debate in Manchester, New Hampshire. For folks not familiar with the jargon, the spin room is where all the press hangs out. And if you're watching this as a video, you can see the media and candidates swarming over our shoulders. Which reminds me, you should check out 538 on YouTube. If you haven't, you can watch us there and see all the action behind us. Anyway, it was a high-stakes debate with the next primary contest, of course, here in New Hampshire, only 4 days away. It was also high-stakes because of the way the Iowa results, or lack thereof, have jumbled the leaderboard. So there's an ongoing competition among the more moderate candidates to try to emerge as the leading alternative to Bernie Sanders, who currently leads the polls in New Hampshire. So, how did it go? To answer that, are here with me, Editor-in-Chief Nate Silver. How's it going?
It's going great, Galen.
Also here with us, Managing Editor Micah Cohen. How are you?
Very good. Hello.
MEMC, Managing Editor Micah Cohen.
And also here with us is Politics Editor Sarah Frostenson. How are you?
Good. Hey, Galen.
All right. So, Sarah, let's start with you. What are your top line takeaways from tonight's debate?
Well, going in, I believe the New Hampshire party chair had said that this was the most consequential primary debate ever for New Hampshire. And I gotta say, it did not live up to the hype. Because
taking us down a notch, Sarah.
Well, you know, Sanders and Buttigieg, to your point, you know, have kind of both been crowned as the victors coming out of Iowa, right? And they both had really good nights. So it's not like someone else who hadn't benefited in some way from Iowa, I felt like, stole the spotlight from them. You know, to his credit, I think Biden did speak up more, was a bit more energetic and emphatic about why you shouldn't forget about him, even if his opening bid was like, look, I didn't do well in Iowa. I'm also not going to do well in New Hampshire. He moved away from that, though, right? He pivoted to South Carolina. He talked about, look, I get things done in Congress. Here's why you should vote for me. But that said, at the end of the day, Buttigieg and Sanders, they had great performances, and they're also doing well in New Hampshire. It's hard for me to see how that shifted tonight.
I didn't think they had great performances, but I would say, like, they did fine. And there wasn't anybody that really stood out for me on the positive end or on the negative end, really. And I think that's what Sarah's saying is right, is that this doesn't feel like a debate that's going to change the trajectory of the race, really.
Do you agree with that?
Of course he does.
I felt like I innovated that take 15 minutes ago, guys.
Oh, no, my God.
Oh, the OG of didn't change much take.
Let me give you some nuances. First of all, there's just been, like, not being confident how a performance will be received and saying it's neutral, right? Like, you know, Buttigieg took some incoming hits on watching cartoons and on his experience level
and on
his record on race in South Bend, right? You know, on the other hand, you know, he's kind of affable, and people were raising their voice a lot more tonight, right? And he kind of, you know, you can see some New Hampshire independents liking that. So it's like, you know, I don't know if people are going to react to Biden's performance, which is different than previous Biden performances, certainly. It does seem like the punditocracy is saying that Amy Klobuchar was the winner. I think Klobuchar did probably have, like, kind of objectively the best debate. The reason I'm suspicious, that's the
best
term.
Of her debates? It was her best debate, or she has
she's
the best debate of all of the candidates
probably,
on stage
tonight?
Probably,
if you're judging on debating points, I don't mean to sound, like, cynical, but we have seen Klobuchar be judged to be the winner of numerous debates. I think maybe fairly, if you're judging on debating points, right? And, like, it really has not moved the polls that much, although even, like, even a 1 or 2 point shift toward Klobuchar could have some effects and probably would come maybe from the Buttigieg camp, maybe from the Biden camp, maybe from the Warren camp. I don't know.
Yeah, I want to drill down on that a little bit because, Sarah, you started us off by saying it seemed like Buttigieg and Sanders kind of captured the night in the way they captured Iowa. The main tension of the evening was perhaps, and you can argue against this idea if you want to, but, like, who would take up the moderate mantle as the alternative to Sanders, right? And clearly the, you know, the main contenders were Buttigieg, Biden, and Klobuchar. Did Klobuchar or Biden do much to, like, stop Buttigieg's momentum or take away that claim of being, at least in this moment, the moderate alternative?
Biden definitely was like, I'm still here, right? He made it clear that he is going to continue to fight to be in this race, even if he does poorly in New Hampshire. That said, I still think if he comes in fourth, that's just not a good look, and it's going to be harder for him moving forward. I think, though, for Klobuchar, to Nate's point, yeah, she had a strong night. She's also had, like, three strong debates, and it's done nothing for her, either nationally, a little bit in Iowa and New Hampshire.
A little bit,
right? But, like, I'm very skeptical that was enough to take her over the finish line. Maybe it is for New Hampshire, but right now she's pretty low in our forecast for chances there.
I also would push back a little bit, Galen, over your framing of the night, just in the sense of, like, the finish in Iowa was, you know, Sanders, Buttigieg, you know, that's still a mess. Then Warren, then Biden. So, like, I think where Warren fits into this race is hard to explain given the lanes. Or I don't know, maybe she just has a small part of one lane. But Biden has to hop all three of them now. Now, maybe he can, but, like, Warren had a fine night too, and she doesn't show any signs of going away, so...
Warren also spoke among the least candidates on stage.
Okay, so the three, I guess you'd kind of call them front runners because the first two tied in Iowa, the other was leading the national polls, right? So Biden, Buttigieg, and Bernie got the most speaking time. Warren, like, because that was my perception, but, like, she actually got decent amounts of speaking time, and, like, it just, she didn't really necessarily have a terribly aggressive strategy.
Well, she got the third least after Steyer and Yang.
Okay.
So Klobuchar spoke more?
Yeah. I mean, what is her position at this point? What's her path forward?
I think her path forward would be going after Bernie. I mean, I don't know, right? I mean, the problem is, like, it's all a little bit fluid, where she kind of drifts a little bit into the kind of college-educated, wonky lane that is not entirely separate from the lane that Buttigieg and Klobuchar are in. I mean, one kind of overarching question I have is, like, how much, and if you're a New Hampshire voter, write in, and actually you're probably not a regular, normal New Hampshire vote if you listen to this podcast. But, like, how much are they behaving tactically, right? Because Biden, excuse me, forget Biden for a moment, Buttigieg and Sanders are pretty different candidates. And if one of the two of them wins, it has pretty big implications for the rest of the primary calendar. It does not necessarily eliminate every other choice. Particularly with Buttigieg, whose map would tend to leave things more wide open, right?
In particular because he does poorly with voters of color.
Yeah, so I'm not sure that even if he wins New Hampshire, that Buttigieg is a particularly safe bet to win New Hampshire, or certainly not South Carolina, right? So how much will voters say, I liked Amy and I like Pete, but Pete has a chance to actually win. I've seen all these polls, so therefore I'm going to stick with Pete or move to Pete, right? It's also why, like, I thought... not execution-wise, because I thought Warren executed better. I thought strategy-wise, Biden gave people more memorable moments, positively kind of and negatively almost. And I think it's almost smart because you don't want, like, that voter to say, okay, well, forget about Joe. He's kind of faded in the background. I'm going to pick Bernie or Buttigieg, right? You want them to say, you know what, actually, I'm a Joe fan, and he needs to get as much vote as he can to stay alive here, right? And because I think the interpretation of Biden finishing third versus fourth, maybe it's stupid. Maybe it doesn't matter, right? I just kind of feel like Biden getting 17% in third place would be received a lot differently than Biden getting, you know, 13% in fourth place.
Yeah, it would. It may be rightfully so. But I just don't think the debates are not a good venue for Biden. They never have been. Even if he has a good strategy, and I don't particularly disagree that, like, being a little more forceful, a little more combative might be good after the fourth place finish in Iowa, he's just not a great debater, you know? I'm not saying that means he wouldn't make a good president, but, like, he's referencing these bills that passed 30 years ago. It's hard to follow the thread. It kind of feels like every fourth word gets dropped out of the sentence. It's just hard. It's hard to follow.
Yeah. And he did get a couple of hits in on Sanders on gun control that I think might be effective, though New Hampshire actually is like a relatively gun friendly state. I mean, that was the thing that seemed weird about it. Like, it felt like half the time they were debating for South Carolina or Nevada
that was weird, right? Yeah.
Klobuchar was the only one who, I think, name dropped three times the two senators from New Hampshire, Maggie Hassan.
Yeah, and, you know, your point about a debate for South Carolina, they did end up having a lengthy discussion about race, you know, even though all but Yang of the candidates on stage were white people, they had a pretty lengthy conversation about race. I mean, how did that play to one candidate's strengths or weaknesses?
No, it didn't play to any of their strengths.
No. Certainly not, like...
Nor does it play particularly to any of our strengths, but still.
But I don't think even relative to not expecting it to play to any of their strengths, did it play to any of their strengths, right? I don't even think, like, you know what I mean?
Given low expectations, yeah. They didn't meet expectations.
Right. It wasn't very good. But, so here was my main question coming out of the debate. Buttigieg's strategy seemed to be, okay, I'm going to get some incoming in this debate. I'm largely not going to hit back. I'm just going to claim a positive message.
The high road
and talk about being a uniter. One, was that a good strategy? And two, how well did he execute it?
I thought he executed it well. It was a pivot, though, I think, from some of his stronger debate performances where he has been more aggressive in his attack of other candidates. Then again, though, in the last debate, I believe, he was particularly harsh on Warren, and at least in our post-poll with Ipsos, saw a decline in his performance. Yeah. And so maybe, like, you know, internally they're like, don't go quite as harsh on her. You have this victory coming out of Iowa. Now you're the unifier. I have always thought he has a great aggressive strategy, though, when debating, and you didn't see that side of him tonight. So then maybe the trade-off is there's not as many, like, there was no, like, Chris Christie moment, right, where someone's laying into Marco Rubio. Like, there wasn't that level of animosity this evening, or just, like, pointed zingers, and he's good at that.
You mentioned that Chris Christie and Marco Rubio moment from 2016, and I do want to ask about how much this debate matters in general for the primary on Tuesday. But before we get to that, today's podcast is brought to you by Hims. Frankly, it's been the kind of week that could make you lose your hair or pull your hair out between Iowa impeachment, the State of the Union, this debate, the list goes on. As you may know, there are now options for guys who want to stop their hair from thinning or who want to grow some back. Hims connects you with a licensed doctor online who will evaluate you and, if appropriate, prescribe finasteride, which will be shipped directly to your door. Finasteride is an FDA-approved daily tablet. It increases the volume and health of your hair beginning after about 3 to 6 months of use. It's what dermatologists recommend for hair loss, and it's shown to effectively help hair regrowth in most men with mild to moderate hair loss that continuously take it. No more awkward in-person doctor's visits or long pharmacy lines. Right now, listeners can get started with a free online consultation with a doctor, and if prescribed, can get their first month free with a 3-month subscription. Go to hims.com/538. Again, that's for Hims. Free month subscription. Go to forhims.com/538. Again, that's forhims.com/538. Prescription requires an online consultation with a physician who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Offer valid only if prescribed. 3-month minimum subscription. Additional restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information. And that's forhims.com/538. So if we need to regrow some hair after this week.
I do.
We know how to do it.
Now I got something exciting we can do.
What?
In 6 minutes, both the Emerson College tracking poll and the Suffolk tracking poll will come out.
Oh, wow. So we have to go at least another 6 minutes, and then you're going to chime in.
I want to guess.
With breaking news.
Wait, they did surveys after the debate?
No, they just come out at 11 every night. I think they kind of care about the debate. We're just going to do our surveys.
So it's totally unrelated to the debate.
Well, you could have a few.
You almost would wonder why you would bring it up on a post-debate podcast.
Because it's exciting.
But to that point, though, this debate is only 4 days before the primary, and that's the closest a debate has been to an actual election. So now the question really comes into play, like, do these things change people's minds? Have we seen them historically shift the numbers?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, remember...
Wait, Micah's shaking his head,
what?
And Nate is saying yes, so I'm excited to hear this disagreement.
Go ahead, Nate.
Were you not here with me?
I see the floor to you, Nate.
In this very state?
I was.
In
this very primary 4 years ago when Marco Rubio got humiliated by Christopher Christie, totally sapping him of his momentum from finishing a good third place in Iowa.
Wait, but now I can't tell whether or not you're being sincere. Do you
actually think, whole mode.
Well, okay. Do you think the debates matter, yes or no?
I think they do. I mean, clearly the Clinton-Obama debate in 08 mattered. I mean, this year, look, these are the debates have not mattered very much. The first one did with Kamala Harris. That got very high ratings.
You just agreed with me.
I'm giving you some nuance, man.
Okay.
Historically, they have, but now they don't.
No, no, no. Wait a second. Debates can matter.
Okay.
Okay? It just takes a lot for them to matter. So, for example, the Kamala Harris attack on Biden, that was a holy shit moment. I mean, in real time, we all watching it were like, wow, what a moment, right? That moved the polls, right? Christie's attack on Rubio was a what the fuck is going on moment. In real time, Nate's right. We were here. We were watching it. We were like, this is crazy. Rubio's like stuck on repeat. It was like a skipping CD or something.
It also got blown up in the next couple days, right? And so,
sure.
You know.
And there are self-reinforcing and magnifying effects. But like the point is, debates are a forum that if there is a moment, that moment can matter. Does anybody think there was a moment tonight that's going to get repeated and repeated and change the race?
That's the thing, no. Because to your point, like Jeff Skelly had actually looked into this for the debates this year. And right, so the one in June with Harris and Biden, that saw about like an 8-point difference in the polls afterwards. But all the other ones, there's like 1 or 2 point changes. And we only went through October, so maybe, you know, the one in December or January had a bigger movement. But again, I just don't think there were these moments that you both are talking about having happened.
Why not? Are the candidates holding back specifically because they think that voters don't want to see them go after each other? Like, what's going on here?
That's a hard question to answer because, like, look at the Rubio-Christie moment. That was like a perfect storm in a lot of ways. Okay, Christie clearly... I was actually in a like staging room with Christie, and I almost asked him sort of like about that moment.
Earlier tonight,
yeah. I didn't, for the record. He was eating pizza, so I didn't want to interrupt him.
ABC News colleague Chris Christie
exactly,
eats pizza.
Who doesn't love pizza?
I bet you can find someone.
Okay. Think about that moment. It was like a perfect storm. So one... Christie clearly had this line of attack he was prepared for on Rubio, right? It was like it was a tactic they had planned out. Rubio perfectly sets Christie up for the attack in the debate. That's not guaranteed to happen, right? But he perfectly sets Christie up. Christie flawlessly executes the attack, and then Rubio like does the same thing Christie is talking about like 5 more times. In other words, it was like, at any moment in that chain of events, if Rubio had just kind of snapped out of it, or if Christie had flubbed the attack, then maybe it's not as dynamic. You get what I mean?
So yeah,
it's
it takes
a lot to reach that level.
So why? But again, why? It's just like you only get one per cycle or something, and you know the Democrats got theirs in the first debate. Do you think they're being specifically amicable?
One thing is like,
Steyer certainly is. That's his whole MO is to agree with everyone on stage.
Yes. Steyer, I don't know what's. Anyway.
Number one, there have not been that many attacks, and attacks are things that tend to create high risk, high reward, right? I mean, Buttigieg certainly changed the dynamics of Warren's campaign, I think, in that debate and triggered a whole debate about Medicare for All, but it was also kind of picking on an underlying weakness of her lack of articulation of a clear view on healthcare. But also like all the candidates are fairly consistent debaters, by which I mean not always consistently good. You know, Biden's consistently mediocre, but like it's not like they're like varying radically from performance to performance. So it's kind of maybe priced in a little bit, you know. I don't know.
All right. So while we wait for these two polls to come out and to prepare them to come out, what are the stakes here? What is the current polling in New Hampshire and how much has it shifted since Iowa?
Okay. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Emerson College tracking poll. 2020 Democratic primary, Sanders 31% minus 1, Buttigieg 24% plus 1, Warren 11 minus 2, Biden 11, no trend, Klobuchar 9, no trend. So, you know, okay.
Is the other one out?
Well, and that was the one that had a little closer. So it's so dorky. In Emerson, Biden has closed the gap, Buttigieg has closed the gap from 9 to 7. That's usually been a pretty good poll for Bernie. In Suffolk, which I think had it just 1 or 2 points, we are waiting results.
Okay, so while we prepare ourselves again for that, how much has the dynamic in New Hampshire shifted since Iowa?
Buttigieg has seen like a smaller bump in New Hampshire, right? But Sanders still leads in the state. But post-Iowa, Buttigieg has seen, I think we would all agree, like modest gains. Like he hasn't deteriorated in New Hampshire.
Wait, Buttigieg?
Yeah, Buttigieg.
No, I'd say more than modest.
Okay.
So, like, what are we're talking about 5 or 6 points here, right?
Well, it depends. I mean, because you're looking at, depends on, in our average is a little bit conservative for the reason I'll explain in a moment here, which is that because there is a debate, our average says, actually, there's a lot of time between now and the election in politics time, right? Because a debate is worth, like, 6 days of campaigning. Therefore, it's as though the primary is 10 days away. And so, therefore, it will not get super aggressive until after the debate, right? If we see Buttigieg's surge continue after the debate, then it would start to pick up on that more. So if you look at just like the last couple of polls and they show 4 points on average, right? Our model still shows 6 or 7 because it's like being like, well, we're not going to totally throw out the old data because it's not time to be super aggressive.
Wait, you're saying that the most recent polls show a 4-point gap between Sanders and Buttigieg, but our model shows a 5 to 6 point gap?
Six or seven, I think. It's still not throwing out old data that showed Sanders with a huge lead. And it will, if we see that trend continue post-debate, right?
Got it.
Then it'll say, okay, that's the new normal now, 4 points. But it's being a little bit conservative.
If you had to, which seems like, it seems like Buttigieg got a modest bump in, a modest but meaningful bump is maybe the way we can all agree to put it, in New Hampshire after Iowa.
If you had a bump, how would you describe it?
If I had a bump?
Sorry.
I'm not sure what that means, but it sounds...
Weird adjective to describe bumps.
Sounds, yeah. Polls generally show Sanders...
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Breaking news. Suffolk University poll. Start from 5th. Amy Klobuchar in 5th place at 6. Joe Biden in 4th place at 11%. Elizabeth Warren in 3rd place at 14%. Bernie Sanders in 2nd place at 24%. Mayor Pete Buttigieg of South Bend, Indiana, former mayor of South Bend, Indiana, 25%. So that's his first New Hampshire lead in a post-Iowa poll.
So that's something. That poll side, generally the polls have shown Sanders leading in New Hampshire a handful of percentage points above of Buttigieg, who's... there's a wider gap between Buttigieg and Warren. Biden is a bit behind Warren, then Klobuchar, right? Things are moving so fast in these days that I do wonder a little bit if it kind of gets to what Nate was saying about the model, if the kind of polls haven't caught up with the Buttigieg, what are we calling the Buttigieg momentum?
The Buttigieg bump?
The Buttigieg bump.
Buttigieg bump.
It's always very, like, trying to predict which way the polls will move is kind of a fool's game. Nevertheless,
He persisted. Nevertheless, he persisted to try to guess how the polls would move.
I do kind of think that, you know, over the next few days, we probably will see Buttigieg climb into a tie or thereabouts with Sanders. You can replay this when I'm wrong.
I don't think you can take that for granted for sure.
Well, of course you can. That's why he's prognosticating.
What a straw man argument.
I was curious about getting the results from the satellite caucuses and how that really helped Sanders. And granted, at that point, so much of the media narrative had already been that Buttigieg won Iowa, right, because of his lead on the state delegate equivalent. Now that we have that data, because I assume these polls probably were in the field before we got that on, like, Thursday at 2 a.m., I want to say.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that adjusts now, or if it's already been set that, no, both Buttigieg and Sanders won Iowa and Buttigieg gets all the benefit, or if it kind of, you know, recalibrates and it's like, actually, Sanders did really well and should get more of the credit in Iowa.
Although, to be clear about, like, what the facts are at the moment, Buttigieg currently in the reporting still leads in state delegate equivalence by a tiny, tiny, tiny margin.
I would just call it a tie. Who knows, ultimately? The sample size is too small. But my assumption would be that what happened in 2012 would happen again. So in 2012, when Mitt Romney was declared the winner of the Iowa caucuses on election night, and then Santorum was declared the winner like 2 weeks later, correct me if I'm wrong, but like Santorum didn't get... There wasn't like a
retroactive...
Right, there wasn't a correction to the record or anything like that in terms of the polling. So I think Buttigieg kind of like got the moment, and you kind of can't go back, you know?
All right. Well, I think we can leave the prognosticating here because we actually have a live show in just 2 days where we'll be able to update everyone on where the race stands in New Hampshire. So look for that in your feeds on Monday. But I think that's it for now.
Hopefully
it
won't be so cold at the live show.
Oh, yeah. It's like it's very cold in this auditorium.
Freezing in here.
And again, as I mentioned at the beginning, if you're listening to this, try watching this.
If you're listening to this and not watching, you don't know what I'm doing right now, and wouldn't you like to know?
It's really cool. He's doing right now is really, really, really cool.
Your
creepy.
Okay, you always sneak in the swear words at times where it's hard for me to edit them out, especially when we're doing these, you know, late night pods where I'm like, okay, we got to get it up soon, and then the listeners love it. So you know,
what, cursing?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, they did. Yeah, for sure. Anyway, thank you, Nate.
Thank you, Galen.
Thank you, Micah.
Would you forget his name?
Sometimes. I don't forget. You know what I'm worried about? That was like forgetting like friends, like spouses and kids and like dogs' names.
All right.
Thanks, Galen.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, Galen.
My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow and Rothschild and Kevin Ryder are here taping with us. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store, or tell someone about us. Actually, tell a friend. Tell your friend's spouse.
Do you really worry about
or dog
forgetting your friend's dog's name?
No, but like, okay.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.